I say kind of came back. That's an extraordinary thing to say because I was actually sitting in the same seat that I'm sitting in now and attending the wedding joyously, but perhaps a little less joyously than I might have, on Zoom. It was my first Zoom wedding. I mean, a wedding I wanted to go to, but which everybody told me I shouldn't. So I didn't, contrary to my general personality flaws. So here I am. It's right after the wedding. And we're going to learn a little bit about, we'll learn a little bit about Parshat Vayera. But could you put it, I just wanted to mention, it's at the front of that this year is Ilui Nishmat Golda Bat Yitzchak Yehuda Halevi Alav Shalom, Uli Ilui Nishmat Yehuda Leib Ben Menachem Levi Zichrono Livracha. This year has, in their honor, has been dedicated anonymously. So we thank the donor and wish the departed an aliyah. Okay. Now we're back to, okay, here we are. Now, when we think about Moshe Rabbeinu, when we, I mean, we're allowed to think about Moshe Rabbeinu, but the thinking about Moshe Rabbeinu is so loaded with superlatives and extraordinary moments and ideas that are not really comprehensible, like Moshe Rabbeinu brought the Torah into the world. Torah shebichtav and Torah shebaal peh. I mean, isn't that? I mean, it's something you could say, but it's very difficult to think about. So, what qualities are necessary to do such a thing, to produce such a result, to be in such esteem? And even though he wasn't, Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't one of the avot, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and then. Maybe we could add on some more, but the three avot are canonized. Those are the avot. And Moshe Rabbeinu was really not one of them. Nevertheless, he did something that they were not able to do, or they were not called upon to do. Even though they intuited, the avot intuited the Torah, what the Torah demanded of us. And that's perhaps what made them avot. But Moshe Rabbeinu, he didn't do that. He received the Torah written down, but the great thing that he achieved, besides the fact that he was able to receive the Torah, which is something that is hard to imagine, but the great thing that Moshe Rabbeinu achieved was that he taught us that you could pass on the Torah from generation to generation. I mean, that's not self-evident. Obvious, something that's necessarily true. But Moshe Rabbeinu did it. And so, in order to do a thing like that, you had to think about doing it. You had to think about what it takes to do it. Like how did Moshe Rabbeinu think about himself? What did he say to himself that enabled him to do this remarkable thing? I mean, we don't see it perhaps as being quite so remarkable as it was because, after all, we've been doing it for so many generations in one way or the other. We've been passing the Torah down. We learn the Torah, we teach the Torah to our children, either personally or hiring somebody to do it on our behalf. But we do it, so many generations that I suppose it makes us think that what Moshe Rabbeinu did was kind of natural, something easily done. But if you think about it, think about the idea that there is a Torah in the world that was came to us from heaven. I mean, it's quite a remarkable notion. and that we could pass the notion and the content down to the next generation. Well, that's really pretty remarkable, I would say. That was pretty remarkable. So let's look at some of the psukim and some of the mefarshim and see what they have to say about the creation of Moshe Rabbeinu. I mean, we know that Moshe Rabbeinu, before the creation of Moshe Rabbeinu, was a special kind of person. He was a person who grew up drinking the milk of his tradition, of the Jewish tradition, such as it was, the tradition of Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov. That was Moshe Rabbeinu. He had a moral sense, a sense of ethical values that was natural to him, but not apparently to other people in the world. He had to deal with injustice, and he did deal with it without being commanded by God to do this or to do that. He was forced to run away because it became known that he had these ideals, and he went to Midian, and in Midian he never lost who he was, who he came with, who he came into the picture with. He was always a person who recognized, even though he lived in the palace of the king of Egypt, he always recognized that he was the bearer of a tradition. So you see that somehow, in the very beginning, even before Moshe Rabbeinu had been designated publicly to carry out the mission of getting the Jewish people first to become the Jewish people and then to leave Mitzrayim in order to get the Torah. It was clearly, without a doubt, a two-step process that had to be led by a very remarkable person. And Moshe Rabbeinu, even before he became, that's what I meant to kind of clarify, that Moshe Rabbeinu, before he was Moshe Rabbeinu, before he was leading the Jews to receive the Torah, right? Before he said, come, let's get the Torah. Before that, he was already somebody special, somebody to look up to, somebody who was able to be a child of the tradition of his biological parents, and was also able to kind of evolve himself, but not lose himself in the tradition of the people that he found himself in, the Egyptian people. And in fact, you know that they built a golden calf. You know, we talk about this at another Shayur, but they built a golden calf. It's bad. It's a bad thing to do. And Moshe Rabbeinu was blamed for the golden calf in the words of Chazal. How so? How did they blame Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu was up on a mountain getting the Torah, and the people were downstairs singing and dancing and serving this odd god. So how could Chazal have blamed Moshe Rabbeinu for making the golden calf? So the answer is that what they said was, you, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're the one who wanted to bring in all, you know, other peoples. People wanted to leave Egypt with the Jews, together with the Jews that we call them Erev Rav. They were like a mixture of all kinds of odd people who, for whatever reason, were not happy under the aegis of the Egyptian rulers. So they asked Moshe Rabbeinu if they could tag along. Could they come along with you? And Moshe Rabbeinu said yes. And because they were in the midst of the people of Israel, where there was some sort of doubt about Moshe Rabbeinu, how come he's late? Where is he? Is he coming? Is this all a kind of just a ruse to confuse us and make us unhappy? All of that was The way people reacted. And so the Erev Rav, or people in the Erev Rav, went to the Jews and he said, listen, we have an idea. We have an old God that we used to worship. It was pretty good for a while. But now we don't worship him anymore. But if you're like looking for a God who could help you out here, let's do the golden calf. And so Chazal said, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're responsible. It's your fault. And what is it? What is it? You know that in the Jewish people, in all the generations, the Jewish people, there were like two basic ideologies. That's it. How are we going to maintain? How are we going to maintain? So there's one ideology says, we've got to build fences, sit down behind the fences, and do our thing and not let anybody else bother us. And as weird as it seems to others, and as strange as we seem to ourselves even sometimes, that's the way we've got to do it in order to maintain, in order to be. Then there's another theory that Jews had, different Jews, but Jews, groups of Jews, they said, no, let's go out. And let's get people in, and let's get the people coming in our direction. And instead of fighting, we'll be friendly. We'll be happy together, right? So you have these two theories, which, you know, in modern times could be emphasized by Hasidut. On the one hand, closed, everybody closes up. Don't let anybody else in. Or especially the Satmar variety of Hasidut. They said, you know, what for? What's the point? We'll have a lot of babies. We'll grow a lot of little scholars, and we'll continue to exist. The other theory was embraced by Lubavitch. Lubavitch, they said, we'll just take him in. We'll make them Jews again. We'll bring them to where they should be. So Moshe Rabbeinu in his attitude, the Erev Rav, was more of a Lubavitcher chassid than a Satmar chassid. He said, bring them in. And Chazal said, you know, if you ask me, you know, say, who's right? Which method is right? So, of course, everybody knows the answer to that question. Right? Both of them are right. If you're dedicated to either plan of action, you'll do positive things. You'll also miss out on things, because you won't be able to be as dedicated to the other, even though everybody in one camp has a little bit of the other camp in him, right? Whether it's the more open camp or the closed camp, everybody agrees that the other camp also exists a little bit for me. So Chazal came in and said, you know who's responsible for the golden calf? It's a remarkable thing with what we're talking about, Moshe Rabbeinu. It was Moshe Rabbeinu. Why was Moshe Rabbeinu of that community, of the community of people that wanted to open and invite and take in and worship together and worship together and share the Torah more than anything else? Why was that? Because look at the way Moshe Rabbeinu was brought up. Who were his teachers? His rebbeim, his family, the people in the court of the king, right? The wise people of the communities. He knew them, he spoke to them, he dealt with them, and therefore, when the Erev Rav or representatives of the Erev Rav came to Moshe Rabbeinu and said, "Can we go with you?" So Moshe Rabbeinu said, wow, what an opportunity to increase the number of people who will accept the dictates of heaven, will follow the leadership of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this is something that Chazal noted, as I understand it. Chazal noted that Moshe Rabbeinu had this weakness. But of course, you know, weaknesses can sometimes be strengths. It's just that you have to be careful with the weakness, right? And you have to be careful about making it into a strength. It's not easy. Not easy at all. So we're looking for Moshe Rabbeinu before he became Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu who invited himself to eat with the open-minded and with the closed-minded, right? That's what Moshe Rabbeinu wanted. And wherever Moshe Rabbeinu went, if you remember in the book of Bamidbar, the stories of Moshe Rabbeinu and his struggles against those who were in conflict with Moshe Rabbeinu, right? They were generally of that order. Like, what's the plan? Who's in charge? How are we going to make sure this works? That was all Moshe Rabbeinu's opposition. And that's how it is in every generation. Anybody who wants to do good, generally speaking, or often, I won't say generally speaking, often true, that the people who want to do a good often meet up with opposition. And it's often true that the opposition is correct. And the truth, the plan is also correct. That's the difficulty. That's the difficulty we have it today. For those of you who live in Yerushalayim are aware of what's going on in the Haredi communities. The Haredi communities internally are the same as the Haredi communities externally, the same as the Dati-Lumi communities. Is it enough, or do I have to add on? Do I have to add on? Because that's the real, and can I be liberal now and then in order to do good of one kind or another? I mean, we all have these problems. We all have these problems. We tend to like ignore them because they're difficult. It's hard to determine, but they're problems. Look at this pasuk, Shmot Perek Gimel pasuk Zayin. If you see it, you should see it on the board. Shmot Perek Gimel pasuk Zayin. Vayomer Hashem, and Moshe, God is speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu. I mean, he's not Moshe Rabbeinu yet. They're having a discussion about what's going to be. Right? Can you imagine that? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe Rabbeinu are discussing what's going to be. Ra'o Ra'iti. Ra'o Ra'iti is in Hebrew what we call Lashon Nofel al Lashon. In English, there's a super word for it. If you play Scrabble, paranomasia. It means when you use two verbs where you could use one. Ra'o Ra'iti is not really any different than Ra'iti. And yet, there's a proclivity in books of the Tanakh to use the double form. You could say, as I've often told you could say, Ra'o Ra'iti is like emphasis. And I really looked hard and I saw something. But whenever anybody tells you that it's emphasis, you can rest assured it's that he doesn't know. Instead of saying you don't know, he says emphasis. I'm happy to say I don't know. It's a literary form. I mean, it's hard to know about literary forms other than that they exist, what they are, why they are better than any other kind of connection of words. So the pasuk says, "Vayomer Hashem, Ra'o Ra'iti et Oni Ami Asher b'Mitzrayim." I saw that they are impoverished. Well, of course they're impoverished. I mean, they're slaves. I mean, what's the point here? Only Ami, my people, God is talking, Asher b'Mitzrayim, ve'etza akatam, and I hear their screaming. Sakatam, it could be a word for prayer, right? You could scream to nothing, or you could scream because you think that you could effect a change. It's almost as though God said, I didn't think it was going to be so bad. I mean, who engineered it? Who made the slavery in Egypt? It was God. So God is now saying, I didn't realize it would really be such a terrible thing. Tzakatam shamatim b'nei noktzav. They were screaming and yelling because of the pain inflicted by their captors. B'nei noktzav. Ki yadati et machlavav. I knew the pain that they were suffering. So in other words, along comes HaKadosh Baruch Hu and talks to Moshe Rabbeinu and says, I know how bad it is. I know how difficult it is. I mean, what do you think, that God didn't know? I mean, what is, like, from our point of view, it's kind of an odd thing to say. So Rashi, see the Rashi there? Ki yadati et machovav kimo Vayda Elokim, Vayda Elokim, and God knew. So, what is Rashi telling you? That sometimes we speak, or the Torah speaks about God as though things are new. I mean, we know that there is no time in heaven. Let me just look at the whole pasuk. I didn't put it on the sheet, but I have it. I have it. Pasuk says, Vayhi. Just 1 second. It says the pasuk says, I'm sorry, Kemo Vayeda Elokim, as though it means before God didn't know, and now God does know. So Rashi says, no, it's the same kind of idea, but that's the wrong interpretation. Klomar Ki Samti Lev Litbonen Viladat Et Machovav. I paid attention. Rashi, Samti Lev Lehit Bonem. I paid attention, Viladat Et Machovav, and to know about the pain that they were suffering. Velo Helamti Eini, Velo Etom Et Ozni Mitzaakatam. I didn't hide my Lo Helamti. I didn't hide my eyes, and I didn't stuff up my ears. And was unable to hear. In other words, how come this is going on for such a long time? But it's not because God didn't know what was happening. God knew what was happening, but for some reason, the thinking was that it should continue until now. It should continue until now. The next pasuk is God's talking to Moshe Rabbeinu, saying, "Vayreid." What does Vayreid mean? Another word that you can't really apply to God, because Vayreid means there's a limit on space. You go from one space to another space. Otherwise, you can't say Vayreid. If God is every place, you can't say Vayreid. But we know that this is one of the elementary mysteries that we live with, right? It's a mystery that God could be in the world and around the world. God could be in a place and every place. And that's what Rashi is reminding us of. He says, Pasuk Chet, right? Va'ered lahatzilo miyad Mitzrayim, right? I wanted to, oh, just 1 second. Let me get the... sent your quest to the presenter. I get it. Presenter, Ezra, can I have the marker? That's what I want. There it is. There it is. Okay, terrific. Terrific. Thank you. No, I could put this back. Back. So, again, by rate. God says by rate. Oh, what happened? I lost it. There's nothing like technology. Press the right arrow key to select. Oh, no, I want this. Okay, doesn't matter. Vayered, start annotating. I didn't want that particular one. There we go. You see, Chet Vayered, Vayered. God is talking to Moshe Rabbeinu in a way that that's simple. Vayered, I went down to see. I mean, it doesn't mean that he went down to see. God doesn't go down, doesn't go up. Vayered, Vayered means something. I'm saying it for you to understand. Latzi Lotus saved the Jewish people. Miyad Mitzrayim ulahaloto, and what will happen with them, the Jewish peoples, that they will go up, mina aretz ahi, Egypt, they will go up from Egypt, el aretz hatova urchava, el aretz zavat chalav udvash, somehow that will take care of, they'll go up to the land of milk and honey, and that will take care of the fact that they've suffered so much, el mekom haknaani v'chiti amori v'prizi achivi v'yabusi. So that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, I know that it seems terrible. And that itself was a question for Moshe Rabbeinu. If it came from God, this punishment of slavery in Mitzrayim, and if it was a planned punishment in order to get B'nai Israel to develop, to change, to expand, to be better than they were, then why was it so difficult? Why was it so bad? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds and he says, Vayered, that's the first thing. Vayered Latzilo. I'm not telling you, Moshe Rabbeinu, to take over the responsibility. It remains God's responsibility to save them. And to bring them up from that land, that's also God's responsibility. Right? El Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash, the land of milk and honey, that's where they're coming to. El Mekom, to the place of the Canaanite tribes, the Knani, Hachivi, Hamori, Haprizi, Hachivi, Hayavusi. Right? They'll all they will be able to go to that place, the place that they were promised, and I will take them there, God says. I will bring them to that place. And that will be the place of Eretz Tova Urchava. Eretz Tova Urchava. Pasuk Tet. Vata inei tzakat b'nei Yisrael ba'at Eli. He says, I want you to know, God says to Moshe Rabbeinu, that the screaming, the wailing of B'nai Yisrael came to me. Ba'elai, v'gabra iti et ha-lachatz Hashem Mitzrayim, lochatzim otam. And this is the reason that the students of Jewish history came to the conclusion, right? They asked this question. Is this question, why were the Egyptians punished so heartily? Why were they punished with the 10 plagues? And then they were punished by drowning in the Yam Suf. I mean, why was it? I mean, if they were simply acting on God's insistence, They were just carrying out God's interest in punishing them or in having them go through this experience. So why were the Egyptians punished? So the answer is in this pasuk. This pasuk, it says, Kam ra'iti et halachat asher Mitzrayim lochatzim otam. I saw the pressure that the Egyptians put them under. So the parashanut, the interpretation was clear. Yes, God insisted that they should spend these years in slavery, but God did not determine the nature of the slavery. The nature of the slavery was overwhelmingly offensive and not what God had intended. And that's why, even though God told Avraham Avinu that the slavery would go on in Egypt for 400 years, it actually went on for 210 years. It was as though God said, I can't bear the pain. As though HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of course, could bear the pain, but what it means is I can't bear to see B'nai Yisrael suffering such pain. And that was not the idea. That was not the idea. The idea was that the idea was that they would be slaves, but even slavery can be passable, not perfect, not totally unreasonable, not totally unreasonable. But in this case, it was totally unreasonable, and so. That's the lachatz. Vata. And now God says to Moshe, Ata lecha v'shlachacha, go, I will send you. I don't want you to do it on your own. You're going to be my shaliach for certain things. El Paro. Votzi et ami b'nei Yisrael mi'mitzrayim. After God promises that he will be involved. He will be involved. He says, so you go and do it. Kick it off. Get it started. Make sure they know who's responsible. Pasuk Yud. Pasuk Yud. Ata lecha v'eshlachacha el paro. You see the Rashi? Vim tomar ma to'il. If you'll say, what's the point? What is it that I'm going to do? Votzei et ami, and you take out my people. Votzei et ami, that you do have a role. And what's the role? Yo'ilu divarecha votzei misha. You will speak words that will have an effect. Will have an effect. Ve'yo'ilu divarecha v'totzi'ei misham. So what is God saying to Moshe Rabbeinu? God is saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, words can create the reality. Words are important, Moshe Rabbeinu. I'll take them out. I'll take them out, but somebody has to talk to them. Somebody has to tell them what the experience that they're having is. It's very difficult. It's very difficult to get what's happening. You're in the midst of some great event. You have heard of the coronavirus, I assume. I mean, it's a great event. It's like a world war. Great numbers of people are dying. We're fighting valiantly against that, fighting valiantly that war. We're not always successful. We're going through a bad patch right now, I think, although I don't want to create the evil eye here. And so you have politics. And the politicians say, you know how we're fighting the war? We're going to vote so-and-so in, or about somebody else in. That's how we're fighting the war. Well, that's either correct or not so correct. So God says to Moshe Rabbeinu, don't worry about taking them out of Mitzrayim. That's not a question. God will be the one who takes them out of Mitzrayim. God will make the miracles. God will have the will make the effect, the negative effect on the Egyptians. Well, that's not a problem, but you want Bnei Yisrael to understand what's happening to them. Why they have to live sometimes with doubt. Why the first miracles, the miracles, the 10 miracles, the 10 plagues, they just weren't enough. I mean, why were they brought into the world if they aren't enough? Okay, I don't know. Something you have to talk about, something you have to listen to Moshe Rabbeinu about, because he'll know. Moshe Rabbeinu will know. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayomer Moshe Elokim, mi anochi ki eilech el paro v'chiyotzi et b'nei Yisrael mimitzrayim. I think Moshe Rabbeinu still didn't exactly get it. Vayomer Moshe, and Moshe Rabbeinu responded to God and said, mi anochi, anochi is a pronoun that's equal to ani. But generally speaking, we see that pronoun anochi as being of greater significance. Not everybody would call himself anochi. I mean, the Aseret HaDibrot start with the word anochi. So you wouldn't use that word disrespectfully. So if Moshe Rabbeinu said, mi anochi, it's like Moshe Rabbeinu said, I am not Anochi. I'm not on that level. I can't go and talk to Paro. Because, you know, when you are talking to somebody, or you want to convince them of something, or you want to move them in a particular direction that you're also interested in, it's good if there's a kind of a parity. I mean, if you would want to convince the king of some plan that you had, you wouldn't send a shoemaker to discuss it with him. You send somebody who looks princely, who seems princely. So it could be that Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, mi anochi keilecha paro. I'm not the paro type, even though I grew up in the temple, not the temple, in the palace. I grew up in the palace of the king, and I know about that, but that's not me. That's not me. I'm more interested in real issues, real things. Me ani ma ani chashuv ledaber imam lachim. I don't have, even if you HaKadosh Baruch Hu arrange a meeting for me with Paro, I mean, it won't go well. Because I won't be able to fake it. I won't be able to make Paro think that I'm more like him. Ma ani chashuv ledaber im hamlachim. Who am I to speak to kings? The rest of the pasuk, v'chi yotzi et b'nei Yisrael b'Mitzrayim, and I should be the one who takes b'nei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. V'af im chashuv ani, Rashi explains it in his own way. Says, why? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu ask two questions? Right? Mi anochi is one question. V'chi yotzi, that's another question. Why do you need two questions? Rashi. So Rashi, that's Rashi's question. So the Rashi's answer is very much Talmudic. It says, Ki yotzi et b'nei Yisrael, af im chashuv ani, even if in some way it turns out that I am chashuv, I do get the vote of Paro. Paro is willing to talk to me. He thinks that I'm an important intellectual. So he says, Ma zachu Yisrael sheta'aseh lahem nes v'otzi'am mi Mitzrayim. So in what way I mean, this is like a little strange, right? A little strange that Rashi should say this. Why is it? In what way? In what way? Even if I am worthy to have a conversation with the king of Egypt, with Paro, Mazahu Yisrael, what way have the people of Israel merited Shete Ase Lahem Nes? Why do they merit that there should be a miracle done on their behalf? On their behalf, Osiyam and Mitzrayim, and I will take them out of Mitzrayim. In other words, God said to Moshe Rabbeinu, the slavery was a little harsh, but it had to be. Didn't have to be so harsh, but it had to be. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, according to this Rashi, but if you want me to do something, you want me to, then they really have to be worthy. Because I can't take them out of Mitzrayim. I can't be the one. I don't have that kind of power or that kind of influence or that kind of responsibility. It's got to be that they deserve it. So finally, Moshe Rabbeinu asks a question. Are they worthy? That's Moshe Rabbeinu's question in these psukim. God said, don't worry, and don't worry, and don't worry. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, okay. I agree that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take them out of Mitzrayim, but do they really deserve the whole package? Do they deserve to go through the desert to receive the Torah, to go to Eretz Canaan? I mean, do they deserve all of that? And Moshe Rabbeinu, after all, himself, he knew that they were a problematic group. He knew that sometimes they fought with each other, Jew against Jew, and that fight could end in homicide. And from that point of view, things haven't changed. Haven't changed. So they knew, so Moshe Rabbeinu said, they're a problematic folk, problematic. And if they're a problematic folk, how are we to make sure that they will receive the miracle that's necessary to get them out? The language of Rashi is, Taseh lahem nes, that you will give them that miracle and I will be able to take them out of Mitzrayim. Because it's hard to say, based on the experience that I have had, Moshe Rabbeinu says, it's hard to say that they deserve it, that they've been exemplary. Exemplary, you know that the Rambam quotes in Hilchot Avodah Zarah that the tribe of Levi was never enslaved. What's a Chazal? Chazal say the tribe of Levi was never enslaved, and that they were allowed to stay in the land of Goshen and study Torah. It was the Rambam said, how could it be? What is slavery? They can't learn, they can't study Torah. I mean, so there'll be nothing left of them. How could they possibly merit the Exodus? That's what the Rambam says. So he said, tribe of Levi. So now I'm not sure if I have a clear vision of when the Rambam quoted historical information from Chazal that didn't seem to have a source. I mean, certainly there are things that the Rambam didn't quote. But why did he quote this? Why did he quote this? Because he believed what Rashi said about Moshe Rabbeinu's response to the offer of a job from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Amazing. Amazingly, what did HaKadosh Baruch, what did Moshe Rabbeinu say? He said, "You want me to take them out of Mitzrayim? You know I can't take them out of Mitzrayim. I can't do that. But how do I know that they deserve the miracles that you're going to have to do in order to get them out of Mitzrayim? Maybe they just don't deserve it." Let's learn one more pasuk before. I'm not sure we have time for the Ramban, but you'll do it on Shabbos. The one pasuk, could you switch the page to the second page or the third page? Ezra.
You have access to it. You can change it.
How do I do it? How do I do it? Do it, do it. See, it doesn't have the pagination here. Do I want to request remote control?
Yeah, take remote control.
I requested, we said you request the presenter. You getting it to me?
Okay.
Okay, so how do I turn the
Okay, I
page?
switched it over.
You switch it over 1 second. 1 second. Should I take control? No. The next page. Ezra, the next page. The next page is Perek Zayin. It's a pasuk in the parsha of Va'era. Thank you very much. Vayomer Hashem Moshe. Vayomer Hashem Moshe. Listen to the parallel. God speaks again to Moshe, and he says, "Re'eh, behold, take note, Netaticha Elohim leParo. You are given over by God to Paro." Which I think means you are the proof that you are representing God. Somehow Paro will see that in you. He'll never argue about that. He'll never argue about whether you, Moshe Rabbeinu, are special, are representative of the heavens. Now he sees it in you. He sees it in you. Va'aron achicha. Yeah, Nevi'echa. Nevi'echa meaning he'll give the message. He'll give over the message in words. You represent something even higher than words. A relationship, a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Netaticha limra the paro. Look at Rashi. Shofet v'lerodeh lirdoto b'makot v'yisurim. Netaticha Elohim the Paro, I gave you to Paro. You're in charge of Paro. In charge in what way? Shofet, the judge, Verodeh, someone who beats him regularly, Lirdoto b'makot v'yisurim. That's what your job is. You beat him with your fists and with torture in some way. He gets what's left over from the Jewish people. Yiyen neviyecha ketargumo miturgemancha. He will translate what you say. V'chein kol lashon nevuah. That's what every time the word navi or nevuah means. Adama machrizu mashmia la'am divrei tochachot. He's the person who says difficult things. He brings difficult matters to the people. And then there are a few sukkim that prove the point, right? And then the final pasuk in here is Atah Tedaber, you will speak at Kol Asher Tzavecha, whatever I tell you to say. Va'aron achicha yedaber paro v'yishalach et b'nei Yisrael l'amos. So you will speak what I tell you to say, now this could be you, Moshe Rabbeinu, now in Egypt, you, Moshe Rabbeinu in Har Sinai, you, Moshe Rabbeinu on the eve of entry into the land of Canaan, Atata Daber, you have a special kind of speech. Ach, et kol asher atzaveka, everything that I command to you, that means everything that's Torah, all the Torah that I give you. Everything is Torah that comes from God. V'aron achicha yidaber el paro, Aron achicha will speak to Paro in a language that he understands. V'yishalachet b'nei Yisrael mi'atzo, and not sure exactly what the connection between all of these things is. V'yishalachet Yisrael mi'atzo, he will send the people away from the land. That seemed to be connected to the difficulties, to the pain that they suffered. Rashi, Atata Daber, you see the Rashi? Where is it, Rashi? Again, just one second. Oh, doesn't work. So, Atata Daber, you see, Atata Daber. Pam achad kol shlichut u shlichut kefi sheshamato mipi. You will speak once every time I send you to speak. Kefi sheshamato mipi. Varod achicha yamlitzenu v'yatimenu ba'aznei paro. And Aaron, your brother, yamlitzenu, will like translate it with one of these translation machines. Yat imenu bazne paro, make it something more acceptable bazne paro. So again, I think that these psukim, these two psukim, right, tell us that it was important at the outset to distinguish speech and Torah talk. There are things that we say, the things that we say, which are, I mean, but they're not Torah. They're not Torah words. They're not Torah formulations. And we have to learn, like Moshe Rabbeinu is going to teach us things. One thing he's going to teach us is that there's good talk, that's Aaron. Aaron has good things to say, and he has difficult things to say to Paro, and he's going to tell the Jews what they should do about Yitziat Mitzrayim, and when they should go, and how they should go, and what they should do. And that was Aaron. But Moshe Rabbeinu's job is to tell Bnei Yisrael that there is another kind of speech. There's divine speech, speech that comes from God, and the speech that goes from God has to come from a special person with a special kind of voice. And that's going to be Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, that has to be taught to Bnei Yisrael. You can't assume that when Moshe goes up on Har Sinai and then comes down again and says, here it is, here's the Torah, and starts declaiming the words of the Torah, that without special preparation, they would have gotten it. No, they had to get it. They had to get it. And to get it, the Ghana, the days when everybody can expect God to speak to him or her personally and tell them what has to be done. But there's going to be a Torah, and that Torah will speak in a special kind of language. And that language will enable the people of Israel, to delve into things more deeply. And so Moshe Rabbeinu, we said at the beginning, Moshe Rabbeinu was a student. He was learning what it meant to be Moshe Rabbeinu. And finally, he gets the idea, I think, that to be Moshe Rabbeinu is not just to be the secretary for the Ribbono Shel Olam, but it's to be the emissary to bring God's will to the people. And that may have been because the Mitzrayim, the end of the slavery in Mitzrayim, was only 210 years. In other words, the people couldn't last the 400 years, either because of what the Egyptians were doing or because of what they hadn't been able to achieve on their own. But without that achievement, as we see in the Rambam, who said that, you know, the B'nai Levi weren't obligated to work. Without that kind of achievement, they're not going to be worthy of leaving Egypt, the Exodus. So even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu said 400 years, he shortened it to less than 400 years because they weren't capable of that. They weren't able to last that 400 years. So instead, Moshe Rabbeinu had to teach them what it meant to receive the words of God, what it meant to receive the words of the Torah. Have a good Shabbos. All the best.
Good Shabbos.
Thank you.
I hear something, but I didn't hear it clearly.